Hey everyone, we are here. It's episode number 7 of Forensic Tales. If we haven't met yet, welcome to this brand new episode. My name is Courtney, and I'm here to provide you with your true crime itch for the week. It's a case that not only shook the lives of our friends across the pond in England, it's a case that truly captured the attention of the entire world. The world followed the story of 2 10-year-old missing girls from a small town in England. Thousands and thousands of people came forward pleading for anyone to provide information about the girls' whereabouts, including a public plea from the uber-famous soccer player David Beckham. Where was Jessica Chapman and Holly Wells? 2 young girls who had their entire lives ahead of them. And how could police investigators use plants to solve the case? This week on Forensic Tales, we cover the Somme murders. Jessica Chapman were 2 10-year-old classmates who had been friends since they were only 4 years old. Even at 4 years old, the 2 girls instantly became best friends, practically joined at the hip, and even looked more like sisters than simply best friends. Jessica Chapman was the youngest in a family of 3 girls, and she was described by her family as being this super lively girl and was always so polite, especially in public. She was also described as kind of a tomboy. She really didn't mind getting her jeans dirty every now and then, and she really liked to play any type of sport. Her friend Holly was more of the girly girl in the friendship. She liked to do things like play dress up and put her mother's makeup on, but this didn't stop the girls from becoming instant best friends. They always say opposites attract. Both girls were described as being very mature for their ages and very responsible, even for only being 10 years old. Anytime the girls were away from their parents' house, they were both very good about telling their mom or their dad exactly where they were and when they would be home. Even though I'm not a parent yet myself, based on what I've read about the girls while researching this case, Jessica and Holly were basically the perfect kind of girls to raise. On August 4th, 2002, Holly and Jessica were hanging out at Holly's family's home in the small town of Somme, England. Somme is a very small town with only a population of about 8,500 people. Literally everyone in town knew each other. The 2 young girls were doing like any other girls their age and just playing around the house, simply enjoying a family barbecue. They were living the absolutely carefree, fun life all of us did when we were only 10 years old. Honestly, when I think back at 10 years old, I probably couldn't wait to grow up and become this quote adult. But now that I'm in my 30s, I'm like, oh my gosh, these were the days. Like, I could literally go back to being a kid like tomorrow. So at approximately 6:15 p.m. on the evening of August 4th, Holly and Jessica decided that they weren't having so much fun at the barbecue and they wanted to go do something else. Can't say I blame them. When you're only 10 years old, hanging around your parents' house at a family barbecue just doesn't sound all that fun. The girls didn't tell anyone at the barbecue what they were planning to do or where they were planning to go. They were just simply being kids. Holly and Jessica decided to leave the house to walk down to a local sports center to get some candy from a vending machine. When I read this part of the story, it just reminded me of how innocent we are as kids. I mean, these 2 girls were literally just walking down the street to a local vending machine to get some candy. They were just being kids. So during their walk back to the vending machine, Holly and Jessica walked past the home of Ian Huntley, a caretaker at a local secondary school. And just to clarify here, a caretaker is an English term to describe someone who basically ensures that buildings are safe, that they're well-maintained, that they're clean. So basically, Ian Hunt was a maintenance-type worker for the school. At 8 p.m. that same night, Holly's mother decided that she wanted to go look around the house for the girls, because she didn't remember seeing Jessica or Holly in quite some time. So the mother decided to check on the girls and have them say goodbye to the house guests from the barbecue. But she couldn't find the girls in the upstairs bedroom, so she searched the entire house. She couldn't find the young girls anywhere. Like any young girl, both Holly and Jessica had a strict 8:30 p.m. curfew. And I can totally relate to this because I know I had a curfew up until I was like 18 years old. So once 8:30 p.m. rolls around, Holly's mom and dad are super worried about their daughter and her friend. Holly's mother decided to call Jessica's parents because she thought maybe the girls decided to go to Jessica's house and maybe just lost track of time. As soon as Holly's mother spoke to Jessica's mom, the fear inside of her grew. It turns out that by this point, Jessica's parents were just as worried about the girls because it was way past their curfew and neither girl had returned home. Holly and Jessica's parents report both girls missing to the police at 9:55 p.m. that same night. Police in England immediately begin an all-hands-on-deck search for Holly and Jessica. Over 400 officers were assigned full-time to search for the two missing 10-year-olds. These officers began knocking on every single door throughout the town of Somme. News about the missing girls began to spread outside of the small town of Somme. And literally, you guys, thousands of volunteers came forward to try and help police find these two missing girls. The United States Air Force base that was stationed nearby even offered local police officers several of their officers to assist in the investigation. Jessica and Holly had taken a photograph together that same night that they went missing from the family barbecue. The photograph depicted the two young girls both wearing red Manchester United replica football jerseys with black shorts. The photo was used on local news media to get the word out about the missing girls. The media urged anyone who saw the girls wearing matching red Manchester United jerseys any time that afternoon or evening to call law enforcement immediately. By this point, law enforcement highly suspect that the girls were likely kidnapped because both girls had basically a perfect track record of abiding by their curfews and were both described by friends and family as being super mature and responsible for their age. It was just not something that these girls, for them not to return home and go missing like this. So police start to make contact with every single registered sex offender in the area. There were over 260 registered sex offenders across the United Kingdom, including 15 high-risk pedophiles who were questioned by law enforcement officers. Police even looked into the girls' internet history, thinking that they may have arranged to meet up with someone that they met online. But police just came up empty-handed after each interview. 4 days after their disappearance, on August 8th, police release CCTV footage of the girls to the public. The CCTV footage showed Jessica and Holly arriving at the local sports center at 6:28 p.m. This tells police and the public that the two girls were alive and well by the time they arrived at the vending machines. By this point in the investigation, Several members of the public began coming forward claiming to have seen Jessica and Holly after their disappearance. Over 2,000 tips arrived at the police station, which makes it extremely difficult for police to sift through the good and the bad tips. Now, I would like to think that the public would only call the police with the good, legitimate tips. But unfortunately, in the real world, this doesn't always happen. And you get things like girls calling in suspecting their crazy ex-boyfriend was somehow involved. One person who called the police with a tip was Mark Tuck. Mark Tuck told police that he actually drove by the two girls on Sand Street around 6:30 p.m. that same night. He told police that he remembered seeing the girls because they were both wearing those red Manchester United jerseys, and it caught his attention. He even told his wife, who was sitting next to him in the car, quote, "Hey, look at those two Beckhams over there." Another woman, Karen Greenwood, also came forward to the police, telling law enforcement that she remembers seeing the two girls walking, quote, arm in arm along College Road, about 2 minutes after Mark Tuck remembers seeing the girls. Unfortunately, none of these leads lead police any closer to finding Holly or Jessica. Police decide they want to go back to the person who was most likely one of the last people to see Holly and Jessica, Ian Huntley, the caretaker at a local secondary school who made contact with the girls that evening. Well, he admitted to police that, yeah, he did talk to Jessica and Holly that evening. He told police that the two girls asked him if his girlfriend and the girl's assistant teacher got the permanent teaching position that she had applied for. And Ian told the girls that unfortunately she didn't get the position. Parents of Holly and Jessica both told police later on that their daughters really adored Ian's girlfriend Maxine. The girls then told Ian that they were so sorry that Maxine didn't get the permanent teaching position. And then the girls left in the direction of a bridge leading towards Clay Street. But police were pretty suspicious about Ian Huntley. Something about his story just didn't sit right with them. A single officer searched Ian's residence for any evidence that the girls were inside the home, but nothing suspicious was found. The officer did notice, however, that several items of clothing were just hanging on an outdoor clothing line, despite the fact that it had rained heavily just a few days before. During the search, Ian reportedly told the officer, quote, "Excuse the dining room, we just had a flood," end quote, which made the hair on the officer's neck stand straight up. During the first week after Holly and Jessica went missing, Ian Huntley, the man police suspected may be involved in their disappearance, began making media appearances. He did an interview for Sky News and even appeared on BBC's show BBC Look East. Ian Huntley told a reporter that during the second week of the search for the missing girls, that he had, quote, "a glimmer of hope that Holly and Jessica would return home safe and sound." Now keep in mind, Ian Huntley doesn't even know Jessica or Holly, and he's got no connection to either family. Ian Huntley really involved himself in the search for the missing girls. He told police and the media that he last saw the girls walking in the direction of a local library. And by this point, Ian was constantly contacting police to see what the status of the investigation was. He even asked police how long DNA evidence could survive before it started to deteriorate. Okay, pause, rewind. Obviously, Ian Huntley is asking police very unusual questions that people like you and I just simply wouldn't be thinking about at a time like this. especially since Ian really didn't have any connection or any relationship to either Holly or Jessica. This guy is literally just some stranger. At this point, my opinion is that Ian is overly and unusually interested in the investigation. We see this a lot in potential suspects when they basically want to figure out exactly what the police know about the case. They're trying to fish for information and see if police are onto them in any type of way. When in reality, this just makes an offender stand out in the eyes of the police. While most people are out there searching for the missing girls, this guy is trying to figure out what the police know and how long DNA evidence can survive. This isn't what a typical person would ask or say to the police during a case like this, and should certainly be seen as a huge red flag in the eyes of the authorities. So as someone who studies forensic psychology, this tells me that police need to start looking closer and closer at this Ian Huntley character. That his interest and fascination into the disappearance of Holly and Jessica is not normal. And what we see with other potential offenders is that this is usually a sign to law enforcement that they are somehow involved or somehow connected to the crime itself. Now, unfortunately, many offenders, especially potential predators like Ian Huntley, unfortunately for themselves, they just can't keep their mouth shut. So police pick up on Ian Huntley's behavior, and they also see it as a huge red flag in the investigation. But they keep their suspicion about him pretty close to the chest. While members of the public were growing more and more frustrated with the lack of progress on the case, police were actually pretty sure they already had their guy. They just had no physical, no forensic evidence yet. The disappearance of Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman became nightly headline news. Everyone, and I mean everyone, was searching for the two missing girls. Manchester United superstar David Beckham even made a TV news appearance pleading for anyone to come forward with any information about the girls. David Beckham also spoke directly to the girls, telling them that they weren't in trouble and that their families missed them very much. On August 16th, 12 days after Jessica and Holly were last seen, police interviewed both Ian Huntley and his girlfriend, Maxine Carr, for over 7 hours. Little did Ian know was that the police already knew that he had been accused of rape just a few years earlier in a neighboring town. Charges were ultimately dismissed in the case, which explains why Ian had no formal police record and was able to work at the local secondary school. When Maxine Carr spoke to the police, she repeatedly told them that she was home the evening Holly and Jessica dropped by the house, and that she was just upstairs taking a bath when Ian briefly spoke to the girls, but that was it. Well, this was a problem for police, and it was a huge problem, because police already had several reports that Maxine wasn't in Somme the night the girls went missing. But in fact, she was actually in Grimsby Town, having been seen by several people who reported Maxine as being, quote, super drunk at the bars that night. So police are faced with another huge red flag in the case. While Ian and Maxine were both being questioned separately by police, crime scene investigators and detectives were busy at work collecting valuable forensic evidence that could tie either Ian or Maxine to the missing girls. They knew something just wasn't right, and Ian or Maxine had to be somehow involved in the girls' disappearance. But without the forensic evidence to prove it, they wouldn't even be able to make an arrest in the case. crime scene investigators began searching the grounds of Somme Village College, where Ian worked, and they even started to search his vehicle. Now, vehicles are a great place for investigators to find forensic evidence. Many offenders will often transport their victims in a vehicle or can even drag valuable trace evidence from the crime scene into their vehicle. So it was a huge priority for investigators to go through Ian's entire vehicle in hopes of finding something, in hopes of finding anything that could tell them where Holly and Jessica were. The search of Ian's car was extremely successful for crime scene investigators. It was like hitting the forensic science jackpot. As soon as investigators opened the car door, they could immediately tell that the vehicle had been extensively cleaned. Like, not just like you took your car and drove it through a mobile car wash. This vehicle was wiped completely clean. The inside of the car even had the scent of a freshly cleaned car. Okay, I hate to break it to anyone here that no matter how much you clean up a crime, I don't care how much bleach you use, it's basically impossible to get rid of every single piece of forensic evidence. Just because a car or even a room seems to be completely cleaned up, there is still so much forensic evidence that we can't even see with the naked eye that is left behind. So I'm assuming that Ian Huntley thought that he must have done a pretty good job cleaning up his car that afternoon. But sorry, another reason why forensic evidence is so amazing is that it can survive even the deepest of cleans. Lisa Nichols Drew, a forensic science lecturer, was one of the people in charge of conducting a forensic search on Ian Huntley's car. Although the car had been extensively cleaned, she immediately saw a very distinctive mixture of brick dust and what looked like concrete on the floor of the car. Police also collected pollen grains from beneath one of the car's tires, thinking that it might tell a story about where the vehicle has been. So it's hard for forensic investigators to know exactly what evidence actually means something in the case and what evidence doesn't mean anything. It's really the job of the forensic investigator to collect everything at the crime scene. At this point, Holly and Jessica were still missing. So investigators don't know if the brick dust found inside the car is somehow linked to their disappearance or not, or if the pollen grains will lead police to the girls. We collect this type of evidence just in hopes that it's going to leave police to their suspect or even explain a certain aspect of the case. So crime scene investigators decide that the pollen grains found underneath the car tire might be important, so they collect it and retain it into evidence. At approximately 12:30 p.m. on August 17th, a man by the name of Keith Pryor discovered the bodies of Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman lying side by side in a 5-foot deep ditch in a location about 10 miles from where the girls went missing in Somme. Holly and Jessica were found nearly 13 days after they went missing. That same day, on August 17th, Ian Huntley and his girlfriend Maxine Carr were both arrested on suspicion of abduction and murder. Police strongly believe the girls were kidnapped and murdered the same day they went missing from the family barbecue. In an attempt to destroy valuable forensic evidence in the case, Ian Huntley attempted to burn both Holly and Jessica's bodies at the dump site. Instead of destroying all of the forensic evidence, Ian Huntley actually left behind forensic breadcrumbs that led police straight to the murderers. While in custody, police and prosecutors worked quickly to build their case against Ian Huntley and his girlfriend, Maxine Carr. Police and forensic scientists began building their case with the most unlikely piece of forensic evidence in the case: the pollen grains found underneath Ian's tires. Forensic botanist Patricia Wiltshire was brought in to work on the case. So forensic botany is a super niche area of forensic science that basically studies plants and applies the application of plant science to criminal investigations. And actually, the field of forensic botany is broken down into many subfields, like pollenology, which is the study of pollens, and dendrochronology, which is the study of tree rings. Botanical evidence can actually be super helpful in a case because it can tell a story about whether a body has been moved or, let's say, the presence of a very unique pollen was found on a suspect's clothing, which can tell police that they were actually present at a crime scene. So once forensic botanist Patricia Wiltshire arrived on scene, she found stinging nettles, which is a super common green leafy plant found in many parts of the world. The forensic botanist found the nettles along the same path where Holly and Jessica's bodies were found, and she discovered that the nettles were growing new side shoots. New side shoots form when a plant has been trampled on, usually by humans. Using this information, Patricia Wiltshire was able to determine that without a doubt that the nettles had been stepped on exactly 13 days prior. This valuable forensic evidence told police investigators that someone walked this exact path 13 days earlier, when Jessica and Holly were officially reported missing by their parents. Besides the nettles, pollen found in a soil sample further led police to believe that Ian Huntley was responsible for murdering Holly and Jessica. Fiber evidence and the soil found inside of Ian Huntley's car was an exact match to the soil and fiber evidence found where the girls' bodies were dumped. This further told police that after Ian dumped the bodies, traces of soil from his shoes were transferred onto the floor of his vehicle. This proved that Ian drove the bodies of Holly and Jessica to that path, dumped their bodies, and returned home in the same vehicle. Forensic botanist Patricia Wiltshire was able to prove that beyond any reasonable doubt that Ian Huntley and his car were present at the dump site the day Holly and Jessica were murdered. The study of plants as valuable forensic evidence was able to solve the case and bring a sense of justice to the families of Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman. This case ended up being one of the biggest cases in history to be solved almost entirely on forensic botany. The funeral services for Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman were held on consecutive days in September 2002. On August 16, 2003, Ian Huntley pled not guilty to the formal charges accusing him of murdering Holly and Jessica. His girlfriend, Maxine Carr, also pled not guilty to charges of attempting to pervert the course of justice and assisting an offender. Police and prosecutors believe that Ian Huntley tricked the girls into coming inside his house that evening. They believe Huntley tricked the girls by telling them that his girlfriend, Maxine Carr, the assistant teacher who they adored, was inside and would love to see them. However, police knew that Carr wasn't even home at the time. Police then believe Ian Huntley murdered Holly and Jessica and drove their bodies to the dump site. This is also where he attempted to burn both the bodies in an attempt to make them unidentifiable. Police and prosecutors weren't able to establish a motive for Ian Huntley murdering Holly and Jessica that night. But the case was solid enough without it. The work of the forensic botanist in this case established a solid case for police and prosecutors. Ian Huntley was convicted of 2 counts of murder and sentenced to life in prison, in which he is required to serve a minimum of 40 years. He will be eligible for parole in the year 2042, when he will be 68 years old. Maxine Carr was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison for perverting the course of justice in the case and assisting her boyfriend, Ian Huntley. An orange petal rose was unveiled by the representatives of Somme Town Council in 2003 that was dedicated to the memory of Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman. It is all thanks to something as small as stinging nettles that another murderer is brought to justice and is finally behind bars. Forensic Tales is a Rockefeller Audio production. If you want to read more about the case of Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman, please visit my website at forensictales.com. And if you haven't done so already, please do me a huge favor. Subscribe to Forensic Tales on wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And please leave us a rating with a review. This greatly helps promote the show and get it out there to other people who are just as obsessed with true crime as you and I. Until next week, remember, not all stories have happy endings.